The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, the following content contains references to suicide and may not be suitable for young or vulnerable ears. I'm joined in studio by Michelle McMullen. Michelle lost her dad Liam to suicide 30 years ago when he was only 48 years old and Michelle only 15. Michelle, thank you very much for joining us. You're very welcome.
Morning, Pat.
Tell us about your dad, because at 15 you've good memories of a chunk of your childhood with him.
I do, yeah. It's funny, you say, tell me about your dad, and the first thing I did was smile. So yeah. that's obviously good. My dad was extremely gregarious. He was very outgoing, very sociable. He had this sort of, I don't know, what vibe, sort of aura, whatever, that drew people to him. When they met him, they knew him forever. He could know someone for 5 minutes and they would just warm to him. He sort of drew people to him. He was funny. He wasn't shy. I suppose he didn't lick it off the ground, as my mom says. But he was just an outgoing. And certainly when you met him, you would think, that's a happy guy.
Now, was life going well for him? Obviously, a happy family life, it would appear on the surface. A business life, all going well?
All going well on the surface, for sure. He sort of, we grew up in a sort of detached, large enough home, Castle Knock. You know, the two cars, three kids, everything seemed great. We were members of the tennis club. His kids went to private schools. It all seemed good. He had a business. It was a construction business back in the 80s to the early 90s, but he still was making money from it and things seemed to be going great. Scratch a little deeper, not so much.
Now, you as a 15-year-old, did you have any intimations at all that things were not going as superficially appeared?
Yes, it's very hard to say this because my dad was a very private man, and so his death was a very private tragedy, and my mum is still alive, so it feels like I'm betraying a confidence, but I have to force myself to do it, but I do it because I hope some good will come from it, so. The happy exterior was there, but then quietly, very quietly, my dad would sometimes have a migraine and he would go to bed for a couple of days on end with a migraine. Now I know, as an adult, obviously that was a depressive episode. It was certainly not a migraine. But back then, as a teenager, and a young teenager, sort of accepted on face value, okay, so he's in bed with a migraine. The migraine, and my mum was great because she would continue on and just normal life would be totally uninterrupted, but my dad would be in bed for a few days with this quote-unquote migraine.
What do you remember of the day he died?
I woke up to the smell of toast. Everything was very quiet. And to this day, when I smell sort of melted butter on warm bread, I want to throw up.
To this day?
Yeah, I can't. It's a normal breakfast scent. You know, you work in any office, people come in and make their breakfast. And they say that smells are more evocative. That was the thing that got me. There was silence in the house. We were on our Halloween midterm break. And it was very unusual with an older brother and a younger sister. There would have been noise and there was just silence. And in that silence, up drifted this smell of toast. And then eventually I pottered into my parents' bedroom and I switched on the TV because there was no one around and I didn't have to go to school. And then after a little bit, I don't know how much time elapsed, my aunt came up, my mom's sister. On a weekday in our house, that was all out of whack. And I must have looked surprised to see her. And she said, your dad was really sick during the night. Your dad got really sick. And strangely enough, the first thing I said was nothing. And she said, then he was taken to hospital. He got so sick. And then I said, okay, let's visit him. strange that that would be. I said instantly, let's visit him. And she said, we darling, we can't visit him because he got really sick then and he died. And the first thing I said was, no. And this stream of no's. And it was instant rejection of the fact that he had died.
Now, you didn't know at that time, and you were not told that time, that he had taken his own life. What were you told?
Initially, I was told, and I should say out of what I think was the best possible motive, and it's so hard now to look back to the 1990s, the pervading culture, the shock of it all, and my mum's huge desire to protect us from anything that would hurt us. And in the most loving motives possible, she said that he had had an aneurysm in his lung, pretty unpredictable, very quick, relatively painless. She sort of, they chose, my mum and her two sisters, who were incredibly close, they sort of chose a narrative that they thought would inflict the least possible pain.
And they stuck with that narrative?
Very much. Absolutely.
At what point in your life, how old were you, when you began to think back to the day and put it all together about the migraines and all of that and ask yourself what really did happen?
It's strange because I want to be able to say, well, I found a clue or I joined the dots together. I didn't. I was coming up to my finals in UCD, so you move from sort of 15 to early 20s, and I'm doing my finals in UCD. And I was starting my finals on the Tuesday, and it was on the Monday morning, and I'll never forget it. I sat up in bed, and I just said aloud to no one in particular, my dad killed himself. I didn't have a dream. There was no angelic revelation. It was just this unbidden, unwelcome dawning of the truth.
So somewhere in your subconscious, all the bits were being put together.
Yeah.
And it came with this dawning.
And the I's must have been crossed and the I's must have been dotted and the T's must have been crossed, because as a complete sentence, out it came, my dad killed himself. And it was, I knew it so completely in my gut. Now as an adult, as a more mature adult, I was a young adult then, as a sort of a middle-aged adult now, I can look back and say, obviously that's sort of the 9/10 of the iceberg of your brain floating underneath the surface had been putting pieces together. There were the migraines in bed for days, and there was also a few unexplained disappearances. So my dad would go away on a business trip, but I didn't know the full story. He didn't see a single medical professional. He never spoke about it. I would say to this day, my dad would deny he had any mental health issues. And those unexplained absences, I later found out my dad had just. And again, I'm sorry, Dad, if you're listening, I don't mean to betray you on this, but he had been getting in his car, driving somewhere to an isolated spot, and just quietly sitting there working up the courage. In the end, he took his own life at work, where he had worked. He'd owned a factory in Drumcondra, just off the left-hand side of the main road. And even now, as an adult, as I drive past, I look to the right.
With this realization, and quite emphatic and 100% in your own head that he had taken his own life, did you then go to your mother and say, tell me the truth?
Yeah, absolutely.
And did she continue to deny?
Yeah. And I will never blame her for that. Like, how do you say to a child, even a big child, your own father chose to not live in this world with you? So she just doubled down to protect us. And that instinct is so understandable to me. It didn't necessarily achieve the greatest good that she wanted, because what happens, for me anyway, I can speak but for no one but myself, but when you have that absolute certainty that you know something has happened. You almost go insane when it's not confirmed. I'm losing my mind.
The impact on you, say, pre-realization, post his death, and post-realization, when you figure you know what's gone on, was there a difference in the way you thought about your father? You know, when you think that your father died of natural causes, suddenly, that's one kind of bereavement. When you realize that your father took his own life, that's maybe a different kind of bereavement?
Perfectly said. All I can equate it to is my aunt, who I was super close to, the one who actually told me my dad died. And in the end, she was the one who admitted that it was suicide. She died a few years ago from cancer. And I watched her fight till the bitter end. Like, she wanted to live, wanted to be with the family she loved. She fought right up to the end. And the kicker in suicide for me is choice. I feel my dad chose not to live. And that's the difference between a horrible illness, a horrible accident, regular death that comes to us all eventually. It's the element of choice brings with it a distinct sting of abandonment. You could be here now. You could see my son. You could see my wedding day. You could hug me. And you choose not to.
I mean, that's, if you like, blaming him for what he did and what he did to the family. But if you kind of think again about that and take it from another side, this was a man in despair.
Yeah. And I, ask me on a different day and I will give you a different answer. So do I blame my dad? Yes. Do I blame him? No. Depending on the day of the week, the month of the year, you know, the season of the year, I will give you a different answer. I have this conflict. It's a mute war waging inside my head. And on the one side, I have my rational side, my empathetic side that says my dad was sick. He made a financial decision, quite a selfless one, in fairness. He had taken out a life assurance policy. He did his checks and balances and decided monetarily he was worth more dead than alive. And he acted on that. But then the other side of my head, and I will never, the angels and devils of my better nature will never not be in conflict over this. The other part of my psyche is a wounded daughter. And the wounded daughter says, my dad left me.
That sliding doors moment, and that's what it is, where you can, in your mind's eye, think of what life would have been like had he lived versus the life that did ensue after he died. Do you often compare those two paths?
Not often, because there, to me, as a, there isn't a reality where he didn't do it. You know, there's just this life, and he did. And that's not even necessarily a bad thing. That's just, an awful lot of me has healed from it. It is possible to heal from it. An awful lot of me has. I don't do a huge comparison very often. But when I force myself to think about it, you know, there are sort of platitudes where you can say, it made you the woman you are today. I hope, you know, you're a nicer person because of it. I hope I was always going to be nice. Like, but I think maybe I just would have been a less sad woman, you know, or it gives you empathy. You now, well, gee, I've never lost a leg to amputation, but I hope that I would have, you know, sympathy with people who have had that experience. I think nothing good comes from suicide.
Do you believe that you became a very young mother because of your father's death?
I do. It's not...
So that's something good.
Yes.
Well, if you think of it that
way.
Yeah,
it is. It is... Look, I sought love and comfort from a male figure in my life. But as you said, I wouldn't have my fabulous son without that. I also have a feeling that I am an adult in my own right. Even then, I was a very, very young adult, but, and I take full responsibility for my own actions. you would be unwise to look at. My dad died when I was doing my junior cert. Before my leaving cert, I was pregnant. I mean, it doesn't take Freud to sort of join those dots.
No, indeed. The question of how your life unfolded then, I mean, the shadow of your father's death has obviously lived with you all of that time. If you were to describe the impact of this to other people who maybe have had a similar experience.
It's so hard to put into words the sense of abandonment and the sense of, for example, I now know that my dad suffered with depression. Okay. He ended up taking his life. For years, I didn't know that. And when I developed depression myself, I felt like a freak. I felt like I was just this anomaly in an otherwise normalish family. I was that proverbial square peg in the round hole. Maybe if I'd known that my dad had also suffered this way, and he was someone I loved, adored, admired, looked up to. Well, if he had it, and I still think he's amazing, maybe I'm not that bad if I have it. And also just from a complete genetic medical picture, that would have been helpful to know. If I could say to, you know, if anyone wanted to know the impact is that I needed an awful lot of therapy. And just to talk about it, my father's silence, I couldn't replicate that. I had to talk it out. And I knew I was coming in to talk to you, and I wanted to think, what impact has this had on my life? And my first instinct is, as I said to you earlier, nothing. I was always going to be who I am. I am me. And then I went, hang on a minute. I started out with my career as a journalist. So you find the truth and then you tell people the truth. And then I went into media and communications, in particular in political advising. So you often take unpalatable truths and you package them up and make them nicer to digest. We don't spin. And then recently I have forayed, like last summer was my first time I became a professional playwright. So then I just went and publicly talked about emotions on stage. So I was like, oh no, it's infiltrated every single, like certainly every career decision, very subconsciously.
Are you conscious of how close you are to your own father's age when he took his life? And whether you have inner fears that history might repeat itself?
Yes and yes, without hesitation. So the way it's going to be weird for me in 3 years' time, 45 now, my dad died at 48. It will be strange when I reach his age. It will be stranger still when I outlive him. And the way I think of suicide now is as a cliff edge. And depending on the winds of circumstance in life, I either inch closer to or further away from that cliff edge. Most people stay well back from that. Thankfully, they will never go near it. Then there are those of us who suffer with mental health who we have stood with our toes dangling over the edge of that cliff. And I have felt that stirring in my soul of the temptation to take that extra step over. And I have wondered, when I look down at that steep, sharp drop, what did it feel like for my dad to step off the edge? Did it feel calming, comforting, reassuring, terrible, terrifying, violent? And I asked myself, what would it feel like for me to fall? All I can hope is, knowing that I have my own son, that I will always find the strength to step back from the edge. And I have a mom who has said to me, if you want to hurt your son the way your dad hurt you, that's what you would do. So how can you do it when you've been told that?
And also those milestones that he missed for you, you would never want to miss for your son.
No, and my son is just gone 27 and I keep telling him to have a baby so I can be a grandmother. And I mean, he obviously tells me to shut up and back off and it's none of his business. But yeah, and at this moment, I talk about suicide as the cliff edge. At this moment, that edge isn't even in sight for me. The edge is a dot to me. I'm happy at home. You know, and look, I don't know the day I could wake up and my perspective would change, but how I feel is I will, because I have seen the legacy of suicide and it is not something I want to inflict.
You prove you're the embodiment of someone who's come through this very challenging time and this awful experience to build a very successful career. So there are many people who are still in the early stages of having lost a parent to suicide who might be inspired by the fact that there is a future.
Oh, I really, really hope so. And it, as I said, my dad was so private. My mom is so private. I have a brother and sister who I can't even begin to speak for. So to open this wound and to let other people see it goes, it's such an anathema to everything I feel. It runs counter to my gut. But I do it because I just want one person to say, I will come out the other end.
Michelle McMullen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat.
Now, for all of this series, we're speaking to people who've been directly impacted as a result of suicide. And it's important for our listeners to know that people's experience of and attitudes towards suicide can be very different, whether they've been bereaved or whether they have attempted it themselves. So if anything in our discussions have caused you distress, please reach out for support by contacting the Samaritans on 116 123. Our series is supported by the Rosalind Carter Fellowship for Mental Health Journalism in Ireland in partnership with Shine and produced by our senior producer and one of this year's fellows, Claire Darmody.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.